Welcome to the MJA podcast. I'm Kate Swanell. Did you know we're having an asynchronous interaction right now? That's the beauty of podcasts, of course. I can chat in real time to academics and clinicians, and you can listen to it at a time that suits you. This is just one way digital technologies are changing the way we learn. Dr. Helen Wozniak is the Academic Lead of Assessment in the Office of Medical Education at the University of Queensland. Dr. Peter de Jong is Assistant Professor at the Centre for Innovation in Medical Education at Leiden University in the Netherlands. Together, they've written an article on digital technologies in medical education, and they are my guests today. So, what roles are digital learning technologies currently playing in medical education?
Well, currently I really think the main role of digital learning technologies is really to mediate and extend learning, so enabling learners to get more flexibility in how they learn, this idea anywhere, anytime, sort of any device. You can sort of consider that medical education is on a bit of a continuum from being sort of more distant, where users are sort of separated from their teachers in both time and place, up to the other end of the continuum, which is sort of face-to-face education, where the learners are co-located with their teachers. I mean, you can still use digital learning technologies there.
For sure.
So digital technologies really have enhanced medical education because they allow teachers to manage and support learning outside of a physical classroom, and they've opened up sort of new channels for communication and interaction. And that sort of interaction between learners and teachers and learners and content, between learners that are not necessarily there at the same place in the same time. I think there's quite a nice analogy that a distant education expert, Terry Anderson, said, and he sort of says that, thinks about it as a metaphor of a dance, so that technology can sort of set the beat and create the music, but in actual fact, it's the whole design of the learning experience which defines how all these things fit together. Technology on its own, without some guiding framework or philosophy or your approach to how you actually want to educate whoever you're educating, that's the sort of the core issue. Technology is really just something that helps pull those things together.
Does medical education lend itself particularly well to the use of technologies? I'm thinking of like simulations, virtual stuff.
Oh, well, I think, there's plenty of options and opportunities. I don't know if it's anywhere that more particular in medical education because, you know, simulation can be used in a whole lot of other environments
sure.
as well.
Yep.
People tend to think, when people talk about digital technologies, they tend to go for the high-tech thing, you know, all the bells and whistles and things. And I guess as we talk more, you'll probably get more of a feel for the fact that that's not necessarily the best choice at all times.
Is the use of digital technology consistent across the country amongst the medical schools in Australia?
It's everywhere. So I don't think there's anywhere where it isn't. But it does depend a lot on the purpose.
Yes.
And your context. So, you know, who are your educators? Where are they located? You know, where the learners are, what are their needs and what's actually available? So sometimes too much choice can actually be a bit of a problem.
What are the misconceptions about the use of technology in medical education?
Yeah, there are a few things that people think about the use of technology. And that maybe are not always correct. The first thing that some people think that it's always better. I don't think that's correct. It's just one of the teaching modalities that an educator can use. And if you use it bad, then it will not be good. And if you use it well, then it can be very good and
mm-hmm.
work very well. So it's not always better. We know from experience and from research that it works best if you blend it very well with your other activities. So make connections between what you tell in the classroom and the things that they are going to work on online. But I think, in fact, that works best with all teaching modalities. I think you have to connect everything that you teach together
yes.
to make sense out of it. But especially for online learning, I think it's important that the teacher keeps making that connection so that the students, you know, don't get lost and know what it is connected to. So that's one thing that people think about technology. The other thing that we run into a lot of times is that we all think that students are so very keen about using technology, are very competent using technology, and that's not always true.
Yeah.
Most maybe do, but there are always students in your classroom, maybe one or two or three, but they are not that competent. So you really have to take care of that as well. And as a result of that, not all students know how to use technology very well in a professional way. E-learning our friends and our mother and our father, but that's different if you start emailing your educator, your teacher, your professor, or maybe your patients. So those are things that we think that students are very well capable in, and they might not be. But we know from practice that there's a huge difference between the skills of the students in your class if it comes to technology.
What are the commonalities between the technologies? I mean, you know, things are always moving forward, but there do seem to be some things in common that teachers can particularly use.
Yeah, there are some things that all technologies have in common, and that those are the things that we like about it and that we can use very well. In general, students can do that work, their online learning at their own pace. Not everybody's as quickly as others. So if you need a little bit more time, or if you have to read something again or do something again, that's easy to do. It is time and place independent. Teaching situations where you cannot get all your students in the same classroom because of the size of the country or whatever, then online learning can be a great solution. You can be connected with many students, even more students than in the classroom itself. You can be connected with other students in the world, or you know, so you can expand that range. And of course, you can cross distances. That makes sense. It doesn't matter where you are. So you can reach people in a distant part of the country. You know, and I know there are big countries like Australia that have that problem sometimes.
Yes.
And I'm in a very small country, so I don't have that.
Is digitally delivered education better than face-to-face or vice versa?
No, it is not. Not always. It can be better. It can be worse. Depends on how good your face-to-face education is and how good your digitally delivered education is. Yeah, we know from research that what I said before, it works best in blended. Even if you do that, you know, then you can, if you do your best and if you blend it well, and it can be a little bit better, but it's not twice or three times better. It's as good or just a little bit better.
Okay. I want to talk in a minute about the digital native thing. Is there also a generational thing going on with the educators themselves? Are there some educators who want to get involved and some who just don't, just want to stand in front of their class and deliver their lecture?
Yeah, and that's not a bad thing. I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing either. Definitely early adopters and more laggards that are a little bit more sceptical. That's perfectly okay. I guess it really comes back to having really careful design. Even the people who are not wanting to uptake any form of digital technology, generally most educators have got issues. There's little things that they would like to do better or that they think could work better. And understanding the context that you're in is really, really important, and understanding where that person's coming from and what's important to them in education. And then often there are ways that you can actually, it opens up conversations, I guess, too, about how to actually change perhaps practices. Have you thought about doing it this way? That way you'd be able to see what your learners are thinking. You like to give lectures, but how do you know whether your learners are actually understanding the concepts? Perhaps if we did some sort of polling system or something like that, that would give you some insight as to where your learners are at. So there's generally questions that you can then frame. There could be a technological solution that could enhance that learning experience, because that's what we're really trying to do, is enhance learning experience.
Yeah. I mean, we've all got stories about the 18-month-old baby who picks up a laptop and starts charging the parents' MasterCard for in-app purchases. But are medical students, are they all digital natives? Are they all good at this? Do they all want it?
Well, that's one of the big popular misconceptions, that because somebody's able to manipulate an iPad to find, the video that they want to watch or that they're able to communicate text really quickly and will be able to go into social media. It's certainly true that our younger generation's able to do that probably more efficiently than perhaps me, but they may not necessarily understand how those tools can actually assist them to learn. Right. So there's actually really wide variation in all generations, believe it or not.
Yeah.
And they don't actually necessarily, and this has been researched really extensively, particularly back in the early 2000s, even now.
Yeah.
And so most educators have actually rejected this idea that the generation that was brought up with everything digital really actually understands how they can use technology for learning. And it goes back to the same thing, that you have to really understand your audience, and you have to accommodate by providing perhaps a range of supports and some guidance, and be really explicit that, yes, I'm going to use social media, but this is the purpose of it and this is how I want you to use it. And this might be different to how you're doing it when you're out having a good time when you're not with me, but this is my approach, and this is how we're going to use it, and this is how you're going to get value out of it. My PhD work was actually looking at how health professionals of all different ages transition back, and how do they actually maximise online learning. There's certainly an element of that, but I think it's not completely focused. You've actually got to design the learning experience effectively. So you can do as much teaching as you like to get people to have greater insight into how to manage their learning, but you actually have to design effective learning experiences in the first place. So as much as we can get people to have greater insight into themselves, you've actually got to make opportunities available to them so that they can sort of harness them. And technology is very good from that perspective.
Because it's flexible?
Yeah, and because it certainly gives people access at different times and different places.
Right.
You can do what we're doing now, which is a synchronous chat, or presumably people will be listening to this later on and it'll be an artifact for someone to listen to, but then they might then go and have a conversation with someone else about what they're hearing well. So they'll be listening to this asynchronously. And we haven't, mapped any study questions around this particular podcast, but that's how these things can, it's the activity that our learners do around these things that matters.
It's more than just sticking a few PDFs and a video online, though, isn't it?
It would be nice if we could do that, that's sort of the attraction, this set and forget. It'll be there for eternity, but in reality, things change, new things come in. Then you can't find the information again. It's not just a matter, there's nothing wrong with doing some learning artifacts for sure, but you've got to have a way of accessing them, and you've got to have some activity around it. So that's sort of the role of our content experts, is to help guide us to where to find things and how it's going to help achieve whatever learning outcome we're trying to achieve.
We're chatting today with Dr. Helen Wozniak from UQ and Dr. Peter de Jong from Leiden University in the Netherlands. So these technologies aren't just a matter of initial outlay and off you all go. There needs to be resourcing behind all of that to keep it at the edge of where it needs to be.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be really complicated and expensive either. So I wouldn't be pouring millions and millions of dollars in building a wonderful repository of all the best videos we can make. It can be something really, really simple.
Can you see a day where the technology takes over from the humans in teaching our medical students? Please say no.
Yeah, I think you can probably guess my answer to that.
Yeah.
No, they'll never replace that. And there's a number of reasons behind that. What students do is actually the most important determinant of what they actually learn. So you actually need to be able to set good learning tasks. They have to be designed. That takes time. And you have to provide the right direction of how to actually interact or use those digital technologies, how to get feedback. And so the teacher who has the content expertise generally needs to work with learning designers that understand what's going to be the best way of managing that concept or that experience that you want to have. And then ultimately, students actually make their own decisions about how much time and effort they'll dedicate to an activity, how they'll approach it. So you can't actually control that. You can put the best video and the best up on the web, but how a student learns, uses it, you actually can't control.
No.
And the technology won't actually motivate them. And
mm-hmm.
we actually know that medical trainees really do like authentic human experiences over just having technological experiences. So what we have to do is to try and make sure that we can give them access to what they need when they need it, so that it's going to extend their learning, perhaps give them better feedback that they can then reflect on later.
And that, I mean, that leads into the next question of how important is that interactivity between student and teacher?
What we know is that interaction, it's really the defining component of all the educational processes. It's actually how learners transform this inert information that's passed to them somehow or other, and then they have to construct it into their own knowledge with their own personal application and value that they might place on it. So how that translates to digital learning technologies is that we tend to think about interactivity in a number of different dimensions. So mm-hmm. we might think about what's the teacher's role in delivering the content, how does the learner relate to that content, what's the mechanism of the learner with the teacher, and is there an option to have learner-to-learner interaction? And so generally I will think about, if I'm looking at how to design effective use of digital technologies, I'll think about all those different dimensions. And sometimes you might want to concentrate on one more than the other. And one of the problems is if you have too much interactivity, it's been sort of labelled hyper-interactivity, and we've all had that where we've gone to a self-paced module and you're forced to actually interact with this artifact, and it ends up becoming this superficial tick box exercise, and you get quite frustrated because you can't move on to the next bit until you've actually matched up those other things.
Of course, the beauty of these technologies is that so often the interactions can be quite fast. Is there a downside to that?
We're all reading emails at all sorts of hours of the day and the night. Mm-hmm. And I guess there is a tendency that people are thinking that you're going to be available 24/7. But like all good teaching, the sort of same principles apply. And that is to make sure that you set really, really clear expectations right at the beginning as to exactly, it comes back to your relationship with the learners, how you will actually respond to them, how you want them to communicate with you. So in our medical program here, we have a large cohort. So we have to be really clear that we have a discussion board forum, and that is the place when they've got questions about certain topics, you can set those things up, and then you'll have students answering their own questions.
Yes.
It's sort of like there's a lot you can do between student to student or trainee to trainee or whatever your group actually is. So it's really setting up really clear expectations. But then you have to control your own enthusiasm and perhaps not answer emails at 11 o'clock at night. But there has to be other ways when something is really urgent and someone really does need help that they can get the support that they need.
Is there a difference between a good face-to-face classroom teacher and a good online teacher?
Probably not, actually. It's very, very similar. It's just slightly different. I guess perhaps an online teacher, you do need, I think the more you can actually be a guide on the side rather than, you know, the sage on the stage for online learning, where learners are actually communicating amongst themselves and solving problems themselves. We know that you learn better when you're socially sort of constructing your own knowledge rather than being a single person over in a corner on your own. The learning is better in that particular way, although there's lots of different ways people learn. But most of the other things, you know, principles is, you know, giving feedback to learners, encouraging active, you know, participation, communicating high expectations, respecting lots of diverse ways of learning, mm-hmm. so providing choice. All those sorts of things are pretty common across education, really.
So what stops every good face-to-face teacher being a good online teacher?
What people tend to do at the beginning is they try to transplant exactly what they're doing in a face-to-face environment into an online environment or a digitally mediated environment. So they don't actually, if you're the most charismatic lecturer and have people absolutely in awe of your knowledge, you will tend to then go and teach online by doing exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
And that's not necessarily the best way to do things. So I guess people tend to try to find technologies that reinforce what they're actually doing. And then you're sort of then missing out on a whole lot of other opportunities that might be available to you. But good educators generally have got those principles. They encourage interaction. They give feedback. it's just people have a little bit of trouble, I guess, translating it.
I'm fascinated by the idea of the panopticon. Digital technologies lend themselves to that concept pretty scarily in some ways. What are the ethical issues involved in that when it comes to education?
This is an interesting topic. Mm-hmm. This has to do with the data and the big data that we are collecting, that those computer systems are easily collecting. And I think we have to realize that we want to use that data for the best. If a teacher thinks about using data from online learning from the systems, we do that because we want to improve our teaching. We want to learn what they do, see what they do. Maybe they make mistakes. Maybe they don't understand what we are telling them, so we can improve everything we do. So I think that's the main goal. Yeah, but on the other hand, of course, there are a lot of, you can translate that to a lot of personal data. I don't need to know a specific student with name and address is always studying at 3 a.m. in the morning. That's not of my business. Mm-hmm. So I can misuse that data as well. As long as I use it anonymously, it's not a problem, but I can use that. And another thing that's not what we want is that, for example, those data, what people are doing, who is interested in what, who makes the best course, who has the worst course, is sold to commercial parties, businesses that you know, can benefit from that and say, hey, we're going to approach you as a customer because we know that you're this and that. And that's, of course, not good. That's not what we want. And that's also not allowed. So it's a difficult topic. We really want to do a lot of good things with the data in the system. And mm-hmm. we have to be careful that they are not misused.
Talking about the role of compromise, people think, here's this fabulous technology. Are we falling for the hype a little bit? Do we need to be a little more tempered in our approach to modern technologies?
The word hype is an interesting one because I see that in my, you know, in my own environment as well.
Sure.
When something new comes up, yeah, a lot of teachers are interested and say, hey, this, I also want this, without really realizing what it is or what the effects are. And I think we all have that. If some new product appears on TV, then maybe you also want to buy it. So as a school, we have to be careful that some things are only a hype. A hype means that it's going to be used a lot and everybody's very excited about it. After the hype, that decreases most of the time. And then in the third phase, it comes back a little bit up to normal use. So mm-hmm. all those new innovations go the same way. Be careful with the hype. If something new is invented, don't start using it all because you never know. Yeah, you have to be reasonable about that. Be careful. And on the other hand, the school organization is supporting the teachers. So a teacher can all of a sudden wants to use the most newest technology, but that doesn't mean that the school can support that very well. So we cannot support thousands of technologies or thousands of apps that give you some classroom interaction. That's impossible for the school. So you have to make choices. And as a school, you make a few choices. You make a compromise. You say, okay, we're going to offer you these three applications, and that's what you can work with. And that's sometimes not always exactly what the user, the teacher wants to use, mm-hmm. but it's the compromise because that's the one that we can support.
Yes.
Or that's the system that is safe, for example, with privacy issues, that there are no names or whatever stored in the... That's also a difficult thing because a teacher that is very enthusiastic about something is also not always good because if you do that, people maybe get disinterested in technology.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what we try to do in our group is to work, we really work with those, with those first early adapters, with those innovators.
Yes.
Now we have to, those are very important to get innovations mm-hmm. going on. But at the same time, as you said, at the same time, you have to be careful and you have to show to others that you're working on it and that, you know, that maybe not everybody's going to get this as it is now, but we are going to work on it and make it available mm-hmm. for the future. So that's a difficult balance for schools sometimes. But not everything that shows up in technology. There's so many things show up in technology every day.
Yep.
Not everything you can use in your that's impossible. Yeah, it should not demotivate people. It has great opportunities, and there are still great opportunities coming up. We talk about online learning here, but There's also a lot of things to do in virtual reality and augmented reality. So there are so many exciting options coming our way, evolve in our teaching, that we can make our teaching even better. The future looks good for technology.
Thanks,
Alan. Okay, thanks.
Thanks, Peter.
Okay.
My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.